Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. It's Farmer Friday here in the Morton studio. I'm Darren Hefty along with my brother Brian. We'll be taking your calls and agronomic questions all throughout the show today. It's your show. We'd love to hear what you want to talk about. 844-44-AG-PHD is the way you get on the show. You can also send us an email, and we've got a few emails to get through here already. radio@agphd.com is that address. And you can find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. Now, Brian, it's snowing again. Wind is blowing out there. Wind chill was cold. I know kids were talking about that today, about how cold that wind chill was. And I got thinking about the compaction out in some of these fields after the wet 2019. Now, if we can get that frost to go down in a ways, we might have a shot of breaking up a little bit of that compaction at least.
Yeah, a little bit. It's not going to solve everything. I mean, compaction is just a tough challenge that you end up fighting usually for years after you create it. And I don't care how deep that frost goes. That frost could go 6 feet deep, and it's still not going to eliminate the problem. And part of the reason why is when you get the frost heaves that go up and down, they don't go side to side. And you think about when you create, let's say you're going out there with a tire and it sinks way down in. Yes, the bottom of that you've got, but then you also have the sides. Okay, so all we're doing a lot of times with these frost heaves when they do come out in the spring is you're raising everything up, you're lowering it back down, and it basically is still mostly together. So the vertical stuff, yeah, that possibly could crumble a little bit, but you know, the horizontal compaction that you created at the bottom of that rut, you're not going to totally eliminate it. And you can see this for years, very often going through fields, it stays there. So that's why we talk about getting crops out there with lots of roots, trying to stay off the field, putting more drain tile in to keep the water table down. And, you know, we were talking about this yesterday a little bit too with some farmers, where as soon as I mention the word tile, you think water. But really, what we're after here is air. What we want to do is introduce more air into the soil. And that's what having tile in the field does. So I would encourage you, instead of thinking about water all the time, let's think about air. I can promise you that if we don't have enough air in that soil, number one, you won't have a healthy soil. Two, you won't have as many roots. Three, you won't have as many beneficial microbes. And four, you won't have as many beneficial other organisms, like take worms. You want earthworms out there. Well, if they don't have air, how are they supposed to live? So we've got to have enough air in that soil. One other thing that I was going to bring up, just in the last couple days, I've been talking to farmers in North Dakota and Minnesota, did a bunch of meetings up there with farmers, and obviously the big concern is, hey, there's a lot of crop out in the field, our corn was wet, all the crops were wet for the most part, test weight was low this year, so they had a lot of challenges, and also there was more lodging, more green snap, all these things, and I just said, you know, we got to think about how we manage the farm. We can't control the weather. We can't control the grain markets. There are a lot of things we can't control, but there certainly are some things we can control. And here are just a few that I would encourage you to look at for next year. Number one, you got to plant an earlier variety. So look at the GDU predictors that are out there, and based on when you're planting and in your area, you can zoom down into your area and see what the predicted GDUs will be after that point. You got to be realistic about stuff. And if it says, hey, you got a 90% chance of not making it, well, that's not good. That's not good. So I'd go to an earlier variety. And I realize when you're down to 80-day corn, you're like, well, there aren't a lot of earlier varieties. I realize that. But you may have to plant these 72, 74, 75, 76-day corn that is out there. It's just the way it goes. On top of that, you got to look at tile drainage. That's going to help speed everything along, in part because your plant roots get to explore more soil. You got to look at seed treatment. There are seed treatments now where we can literally pop the corn out of the ground 20% faster. Is that a big deal at the end of the year when you're way up north? Absolutely it is. And then in terms of test weight, the biggest factor that I've always looked at on our farm is simply fertility. When we started getting our potassium levels better, our test weights went up. All of them. And I get it that, yes, there are certain varieties that the test weight's a little bit better, but you can raise the test weight on all varieties, in all crops, if you just get adequate and balanced fertility out there. And those are all things that you can control as the farmer. So I guess I just encourage people, stop focusing on the things we can't control. Let's focus on what we can do going into 2020, because there's no reason why we can't make 2020 a great year.
Absolutely. And I think you kind of hit on something there, playing the odds. And you talk about picking maturities and playing the right odds for that. But it goes into almost everything that we're talking about here, because I know one of the triggers that we have on the show here is, well, what do I do to get a consistent 5-bushel gain? Well, there's nothing that's super consistent, because the weather is going to be really variable. And within fields and field to field, you've got a lot of variability out there. You just have to play the odds of, okay, over a period of time here, what's going to give me a good return on my investment? And, you know, some of the things like seed treatment last year, I don't even know what the return on investment was. It was 6-1, as a lot of the estimates that I've heard from farmers that we've talked to through the fall here. Wow, it was just tremendous. We saw a big increase by putting a seed treatment out, and even a bigger increase putting a complete seed treatment out with fungicide, insecticide, biological type products, just the whole gamut. Is it going to give a 6-1 return this year? You know what? I would say odds are, since a lot of the soils are fairly wet right now, that it probably will again. But who knows? It might be only 5-1 this year. Well, still, 5-1 return on investment, that's pretty crazy good. So there's one of those things I really like. Talking to many farmers about disease control with foliar fungicides, boy, you know, that's up and down depending on the year and depending on what's going on out in those fields, what kind of stressful situations there are that you're trying to mitigate. We don't know. We don't know exactly what the return on investment is going to be. We just know on average, these types of things really pay. Keeping your crop healthy and protected over time definitely pays. There's no question about that. On today's show, it's Farmer Friday. That means we're taking your calls and agronomic questions. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. Or if you're kind of shy, you can just send us an email. That's okay too. radio@agphd.com. We'll be right back. When looking for someone to help with your risk management, a key component to look for is patience. Patience to bring you along in the process at your own speed. Patience to learn about your operation. And patience to not only discuss what strategies may be effective for your plan, but why they would be effective. That's the strength of Grain PhD. I'm Darren Hefty. When you're ready to become more engaged in your risk management, Grain PhD can assist you with that process. Visit grainphd.com to learn more.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're taking your calls and agronomic questions throughout the show. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD, and we're going to start this segment out in Wyoming with our friend Chris. Chris, how's it going out there?
pretty good. How are you, Darren?
Not too bad. How did your irrigation project turn out? I know the irrigation district in your area had some major issues this year. Is it all ready to go for next year?
It is not, but they are working on it. They were able to restore water. We started taking delivery around, I think it was the 1st of September. So it was 45 days without water in the summer in a desert. So it was not an ideal situation, but God did help us out some. We had almost 23 inches of moisture for the year, and so where 12 is normal, that was a big blessing. And it wasn't a disaster. You know, the corn was not great, but it could have been a lot worse where it didn't have any water until September. We still had some fields making 160 or 70, so that wasn't terrible. But they are working on the project, and they are working through the winter, and they're doing some, they were able to get the tunnel, or they had to dig all the dirt off the top of this tunnel. And then they were able to get the water flowing back through it again with a kind of a patch for a few days or, you know, whatever. We had water for about 6 weeks, I guess, once they were able to get it running again. And they're working on doing what they call structural grouting, and they can try to fix the tunnel that's been there for 100 years. But that's really their issue, is infrastructure that's 100 years old and nobody's maintained it. And, so they are working on it. There's two different tunnels. There's major concerns, and so they're working on them through the winter. The guys have been working on that. But they are working on it, so we'll see. I guess there's good water supply for next year, but without a fix, the Bureau of Rec was not going to allow us to have water. So we've got to get that fixed.
Yeah, it's interesting. In a lot of these big projects like that, how much upkeep, how much maintenance? As you mentioned, that system's been out there for 100 years. I had no idea it'd been there that long. That's wow. That's really remarkable.
Well, it's kind of a tricky deal, and then you get into it when you have a natural disaster. Of the Bureau of Rec owns it, but it's our job to maintain it, or our district's job to maintain it, and it's uninsurable. So it's kind of a deal. Oh, who's going to pay for all this? And
yeah,
so really, you know, that's a $15 million price tag per tunnel is not an ideal situation.
No, that's for sure. And that greatly impacts what your cropping plan is for next year. So what do you do? How do you handle that? Do you hold some decisions off until spring then and just see how far they've come?
Well,
or do you plan as normal?
Like I think you kind of plan as normal. I mean, I think last year was worst case scenario. That wasn't on anybody's radar that could ever happen. And then it does happen. And so there is some funds available through the state of Wyoming, and that's kind of where it's a tricky situation. Wyoming and Nebraska share this district, and so Wyoming pays for some, Nebraska pays for half, and we pay for half, and we're kind of working through that. But as of right now, you know, they were able to run the canal for six weeks with it running. That was one of the key things they wanted to get done last fall, to see if they could even run it again with these temporary fixes in. So they're working on that, and I think the temporary fix will still be in place for this next year, and then after that they'll be able to do what they call hopefully the permanent fix. But, you know, these guys that made these tunnels 100 years ago, it's incredible they could even come up with this. They didn't have computer programs. They did all this stuff by hand and with their brains, and how they were able to build this stuff, and it's just a remarkable feat. You know, cement doesn't last 25 years on top of the ground, and these cements lasted 100 under the ground in water.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it is really impressive. A lot of the big projects that our forefathers did, and the planning that they had. I know we talk about even just clay tile that got hand dug in the ground 100 years ago here, that we're just amazed some of those are still functional. And I don't know, to get that figured out just right, to do it all by hand. Some of the guys dug those in the winter too. And wow, what a testament, no doubt about that. Well, Chris, hopefully this all works out well this summer. I'm really anxious to see and hear how it does, as I'm sure everyone in that region is. Good luck to you here heading into 2020.
All right. Thank you, Darren.
You bet. Thank you. Let's head over to Ohio. We've got Brett with us right now. Brett, how's it going?
All right. How are you today?
We're doing quite well. Interesting reports, of course. Everybody's always curious to see how that's going to come out. What do farmers in your area think about it?
Well, I talked to Marker this morning, and they thought her boss thought it might be exactly opposite where we thought it would come out of. So I guess a little tweak in it wasn't as bad as what could have been. But as far as our crop in Ohio, where I was at, we had a terrible crop this year. It was wet all spring, wet until July, and then it quit raining for 3 months. So, in fact, we had trouble even getting the wheat up this fall. It was so dry, but oh well, life goes on.
Yeah, it was just crazy. I know we were watching the weather in Ohio really closely, and our home state of South Dakota had a lot of the same challenges this year. It seems like all the bad weather reports were Ohio and South Dakota. but you guys dried out. So talk to me about that. How have you turned out now? What's winter shaping up like, and what's your hope for the spring?
We had a good fall. We got things out and actually got a lot of ripping done, cover crops planted. In fact, I probably got 80 to 90% of what I wanted to completed this fall. Even got some tile put in, yet they're late this fall. But now it's rained now for a day and a half, and supposed to get another day of rain on top of it, so we'll be wet for a while. But actually, you know, as far as subsurface moisture, I think we're all right. The tile is running some, but it's not. We fixed a couple tile, and it's not overbearing. So
good. So did it mess up your crop rotation this year with just how everything turned out, trying to get crops in, or are you going to be kind of right on pace next year?
I think we'll be all right. We plant a little bit more wheat this fall than what we have been. Of course, we haven't planted any wheat for about 8 to 10 years, the last 3 years. And then we went back and threw some wheat in the rotation because of price. And then also tiling gave us more time to get some fields tiled. But I don't know, we've been blessed. We've been able to have a decent wheat crop, and we've got some pretty good double crop beans off there, which don't happen quite often, but we've been able to harvest early and dry the wheat, get in about a week and a half or 2 weeks early planting double crop beans. So we've had some decent yields, actually.
How full season a bean can you plant in the double crop situation in Ohio?
We have tried everything from a 2.7 to a 3.8. Tell you the truth, the one that works fairly consistent is a 3.0. It seems like we go earlier and they get too short. We go later, we can't quite get, full maturity on them. But we had, a good fall. In fact, we had heat clear up until we finished harvest. So that was kind of different for us. So the double crops completely matured, and we were able to harvest them before I finished corn, actually.
You know, you mentioned this winter wheat that went in and just trying to get a decent enough stand on it. How did you turn out? How is your stand going into the cold months here?
It looks good now. We tried something different again. We went to 15-inch wheat, but we crisscrossed it or diamond-shaped it. We kind of chickened out on going all 15-inch wheat, so we heard some horror stories and things like that. It sounded like a good deal when we bought the plates early, but we chickened out and diamond shaped it. Actually, the wheat looks pretty darn good right now. It's got good tillers. We finally got it in the ground, and that's why we went to a planter, back to a planter, because we couldn't get in the ground deep enough with no tilling it in. So we went to the planter, and we've got good depth and good spacing now.
That sounds great. Yeah, well, I really appreciate hearing about how things are going there. I'm glad things look a little more promising than they did in the spring of 2019, and you're part of Ohio, Brett. Thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on, and good luck here going into the spring.
Thank you. You too.
It's Farmer Friday on our show today. We'd love to hear from you, and our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic herbicides from Atticus LLC. Tough broadleaf weeds are a hassle, but they're no match for Cavallo from Atticus. Cavallo delivers fast, contact, and residual control so your corn, soybean, and sorghum crops can thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AtticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Revitech fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Bean growers continue to see yield loss from white mold across the Midwest this season. To maximize next year's crop, a white mold prevention strategy that includes Contans WG soil fungicide is a must for your farming operation. Applying Contans this fall to reduce the sclerotia in the soil is the most effective way to stop white mold at its source. Start a Contans white mold control strategy this fall or pay for it later in lost yield.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio on Farmer Friday. We're taking your calls and agronomic questions throughout the show today at 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's head up to Ontario. We got John with us right now. John, thanks for calling.
How you doing, guys?
We're doing well. What can we do for you?
Well, I got a question about soil pH in a four-crop system. So we grow corn, soybeans, wheat, sort of like 1 year of each, and then we rotate out to alfalfa for about 3 years.
Okay.
And all those things sort of need different pHs. And I'm wondering what's the best approach or what's the right thing to do to get the right pH for all those crops?
Well, those really aren't all that terribly different. Alfalfa, we need to be close to 7. Corn probably prefers it a little bit closer to 6, but nevertheless, there are some great corn farmers with fantastic yields, and their soil pH is 6.8 or 7. So personally, if it's me, if I had an ideal pH for all 4 of those crops, it would be somewhere in the upper 6s. That's probably what I would shoot for if I said, hey, I'm just going to try to be at 1 pH for all 4 crops.
I see. Okay. So, and then the other issue here in this area is we're on a limestone base, so the pH is naturally high.
Yep.
So we got to take steps to lower pH most of the time.
Yep.
What's the most efficient way to do that, the most economical way?
Okay. So first of all, how high a pH are we talking?
7.2, 7.3, 7.4 in that area usually.
Yeah, that's not terrible. I mean, at that, you're not giving up much yield on corn or soybeans. And wheat, you're awful close to the ideal. Alfalfa, you're almost at the ideal. So I'm not that terribly worried about it. One of the biggest issues you're going to have when you start getting that pH up into the sevens is you're going to have a little less availability of phosphorus and some of the micronutrients. Plus, your soil life probably won't be as good as if you had the pH down just a little bit. So usually we're talking about, for pH lowering, we try to figure out, okay, why is the pH high in the first place? And as soon as you tell me limestone base, one of my concerns is how much erosion have we had there and how much topsoil have we built over time? And so we have the exact same thing where we farm. We have limestone base, and if we have eroded hilltops, for example, then yeah, our pH is way high, and it's simply because we don't have any topsoil left there. So we work on trying to build new topsoil there, which means we got to reduce tillage. We're going to probably use some more manure or compost there. We try to raise crops that have lots of roots. So we might go corn for 10 years in a row, for example. And then if you'd want to, you can accelerate this process by using some elemental sulfur. So the other most common area where we see high pHs is where we have drainage issues. It doesn't sound like that's the case here, but maybe, I mean, if you've got some spots where you need drainage help, then obviously make sure you get that taken care of, because we've got to flush all those salts through, and then usually things start to moderate. But I mean, you want to keep in mind, pH is basically the result of what's happened in your soil and also your overall balance in nutrients. So we want to look at not just N, P, and K, but how are we doing on sulfur? How are we doing on some of the different micronutrients? Just keep working on getting those things balanced. Do everything you can to raise a great crop. And keep in mind that in time, the more crop you're raising, the more roots you have and the more organic acids that those roots kick out. And they will naturally drop your pH a little bit from the low sevens to the probably mid sixes, and then everything's perfect.
Right, I see. Actually, I've only recently become a convert to drainage tile, and it's one of the lines that you guys came up with. Or I don't know if you came up with it, but I've heard it. You say it, you pay for drainage tile whether you have it or not. So that's something that we got to look forward and start doing, because in the past it was like, well, I can't afford to do drainage, but now it sounds like you can't afford not to do it. So that's something we're looking towards in the next few years
too. Yeah, I was just talking earlier in the show, the last couple of days, they did a whole bunch of farmer meetings in North Dakota and Minnesota. And one of the things I talked about at all these meetings was drain tile. And I just told this story. My dad passed away this past year, but one of the things he talked about quite often was he was originally from Iowa, where everything was pattern tile. And he said, Brian, you know, I've heard people, farmers, all my life complain about, oh, I spent too much on this, this cost too much, I wish I wouldn't have done that. He said, you know, I've heard this my whole life. But he goes, the one thing that not a single farmer in my entire life has ever said they spent too much money on was drain tile. He said, that's the one thing where every farmer goes, hey, you know, I wish I'd have done more when I was out there doing it. I wish I'd have spent more, wish I'd have put more in, because it pays.
Yeah, it sure seems to. And we do a lot of custom operations for other farmers, and we are sure seeing that on farms that are pattern tiled than farms that are not tiled at all. It's just this fall, especially with it being so miserable to get the crop out of the field, there was, you know, it was just night and day between a drain farm and a not drain farm.
Well, I'll just tell you, we farm about 3,000 acres. It's all tiled. We got every acre planted this spring. Many of our neighbors had to take prevent plant. Our state was like 40% unplanted. We planted everything. We harvested everything timely. We were all done by November 1st with corn, beans, everything. And in South Dakota, if you look at November 1st in the government report, it was like 90, 95% of the corn was still in the field. None of that stuff would have been possible if we weren't tiled.
Well, we still have quite a bit of corn out here, actually. Some of it didn't come off. We finished our last combining on the 19th of December, which is a day later than last year. And I think we've got about 400 acres for a guy to do in the spring, because he's leaving his corn, when he nosed into it back in the middle of December, was 41%.
Oh, yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for the call,
John.
Thank
you very much for the information, guys. I appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you.
Head over to Michigan. We got Todd on with us. Todd, how are you today?
Great. Good to hear you guys.
You bet.
Hey, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, you were talking about fertility and alfalfa, and I had jumped back into the truck kind of in the middle of the program, and you're talking about a micronutrient, and I hadn't heard of it before. It wasn't one of the common ones, but it was like Gillibrand or Gilla and
gibberellic acid, maybe. There's also molybdenum. So I
molybdenum, that was
molybdenum,
it.
Yeah.
That was it. Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
All right.
So yeah, molybdenum is very important for really all crops, but alfalfa and soybeans are two where the needs are a little higher than some other crops, in part because they are legumes, and it has to do with the fixing of nitrogen.
Okay. Molybdenum, it's called.
Molybdenum, yep. Yep, molybdenum, yeah.
I just got to a stop sign here.
Yep. M-O is the chemical symbol for that,
okay.
The elemental symbol, but molybdenum. Yeah, so I remember that now because we were talking to Neil Kinsey about that. And one of the interesting things with molybdenum, when you look at the, in the United States here, the EPA puts a chart out on how much can you apply of heavy metals to your ground. And so I'm a big believer of, hey, if I'm short on something, I'm going to make one application and I'm going to get my levels up to where they need to be. So we had non-detectable levels of molybdenum in some of our fields. And I'm like, okay, well, we want to be at one part per million. That means I'd need to apply 2 pounds per acre. Pretty simple. I don't care what it costs. We're going to do it because that'll make us money. And then I go look at the EPA chart and I can't legally put on that much molybdenum in 1 year. You can do 8/10 of an actual pound per year. That is the legal limit for what you can apply because molybdenum is considered a heavy metal. So anyway, what Neil Kinsey talks about is 7 ounces of some molybdenum product. Which one is it, Darren?
Sodium molybdate.
Yeah, sodium molybdate. He talks about 7 ounces of that product applied 3 years in a row, and then you see kind of where you're at. But it's spoon feeding it. I mean, it's going to build the soil. I mean, it's going to be more than your crop's going to use, but he talks about getting those levels up. But yes, you can run soil tests, you can run plant tissue analysis, and you can also do some foliar feeding in terms of application. You don't just have to apply it on the soil. There are lots of ways to do this.
Okay, and then does it leach out, or does it stay in the ground pretty good?
Molybdenum can eventually leach out. It's not going to leach out like nitrate or, for that matter, even sulfate. But yes, it eventually could go away, which does kind of explain why, if we haven't been applying it, we are getting some non-detectable levels. And yeah, we focused on all these other nutrients, but you know, we hadn't really talked much about molybdenum until the last probably 3 years ourselves either.
Okay, yeah, I raised some alfalfa for a local dairy, and I got a 40. I'm going to be seeding this spring, and I got to soil test it, and I thought, you know, what a test
Definitely something that we got to take a look at. We'll be right back.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With 2 effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Using N-Serve Nitrogen Stabilizer with fall fertilizer applications keeps nitrogen available into the spring for maximum crop growth. Field trials in Iowa show N-Serve delivered an average revenue increase of $22.96 per acre, and N-Serve is the only recognized nitrogen stabilizer product in the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy because it reduces nitrate leaching. That's max profit in an environmentally sustainable way. Calculate your field's profit potential at nitrogenmaximizers.com.
We know balanced crop nutrition pays. AgriLiquid has the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop, plus the expertise to give you a recommendation based on your soils, your fields, and your goals. AgriLiquid has the phosphorus, potassium, and micronutrient products necessary to deliver the best results from a solid fertility program. Visit agriliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
Avoid dry run failures with the new Hypro Force Field Pump. Providing the ultimate protection, this wet seal pump will save you on costly in-season downtime to keep your sprayer running. Now all you have to worry about is the weather. Hypro,
helping you spray better.
The last thing you want after harvesting your grain is to spoil it before it goes to market. The Grain Temp Guard from Farm Shop MFG is a low-cost bin monitoring solution that tracks temperature and humidity and alerts you when conditions exceed safe thresholds. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
You know a healthy crop is required for your best results. Simply put, balanced crop nutrition pays. AgriLiquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products to deliver those results. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you with your fertility decisions. AgriLiquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agriliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. Our exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. It's a Farmer Friday. Been fun with the discussion so far, getting to different crops and soils and 2019 again. What do you want to talk about? We'd love to hear from you. 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's head over to Wisconsin. We got Zane with us right now. Zane certainly had a wet year or two, I'm imagining. How you doing, Zane?
Oh, not too bad. Actually, I'm from Wisconsin, but I'm driving to Kansas right now. But Got to support my farming habit by driving trucks.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. All right, I heard you had a question on compost. What you got?
Yeah, well, my sister, she raises sheep and stuff. I take care of the feed. I get the manure and stuff from them. And she don't want me hauling it out this spring because she has the lambs and the ewes out there. So I was going to pile it for the summer. It's usually either in fall or the following spring for a haul it. And I'm wondering, would it help to throw a couple hundred pounds of, like, 4600 in that pile of compost to help break things down faster?
Well, first of all, you say compost. Is it actually compost, or is it a manure pile?
Well, it's a manure pile.
Okay.
It's kind of a drier manure pile.
Yep.
It's mainly hay, some sheep manure. I usually mix in a little manure from the steer pen to give it some moisture to kind of break it down.
Sure. So I'll tell you one of the things that we run into, Zane, is we work with a lot of larger livestock producers that can't have manure piles sitting around anymore because it's above, well, it gets to be, I don't know how you want to term it, a reportable quantity. It's such a big amount. People get worried about the contamination with it, you know, those kind of things. And it's kind of the same deal that I would get concerned about for you if a manure pile is going to be sitting around for 6 months during the summertime. I mean, in the wintertime, it's a different deal because it's froze. But in the summertime, you know, you do worry about, hey, rain hits it, leaches the nutrients out, and it can, and they can go off your ground. But anyway, what a lot of these large livestock producers are doing now is working on actually turning the manure into compost. And yes, there is a certain carbon to nitrogen ratio you want to have there. So let's say your manure pile was comprised mostly of straw residue, and there wasn't actually lots of what we would typically call manure in there. So then, yes, maybe some nitrogen would help. The other big thing that we talk about is the amount of water that's in there to compost it. And then we're using biologicals anymore to work on compost. So there's a product we've been using for a while now called Decomp. That it's like 65 or 70 different biologicals, different microbial species that can actually go into that pile, heat it up, and then turn it into compost, usually in about 3 or 4 weeks. Otherwise, a lot of times it'll take a couple months or more and then you have to turn the compost or turn that pile a bunch of times, but eventually you compost it. But yes, we are big believers in turning manure into compost whenever it's going to sit around for a while. And the other nice thing with that, not only is it going to be then, of course, more environmentally friendly, but it's a good deal for your ground and when you're applying it, because it's kind of like you've, to put it in layman's terms, it's almost like you've turned it into organic matter that's in your soil. It's a good thing for the long-term health of that soil. So we do love compost, but yes, you're going to have to, our advice to you would be work on turning this manure pile into compost, and I would probably try some as decomp product, or you know, you can do it manually too if you want to. It's just it requires some work to turn that from time to time, change it into compost, and then you're in much better shape and that pile will stay pretty well intact going into the fall. So that's probably what I'd do.
Oh, okay. I never talked about the biological section. I forgot about them. That.
Yep.
I haven't heard about them in the past. So.
Yeah, one other thing.
Too, go ahead.
Yeah, one other thing I was going to add to that. When you turn manure into compost, and one of the reasons why it's so much better for ground and more environmentally friendly is the pile actually heats up. And when it heats up, it'll get to like between 130 and 160 degrees most of the time. And that will kill a lot of the problems that you have in there. Sometimes it'll even kill weed seeds, kills bugs, kills some of the stuff you don't want going onto your ground later.
And you can speed the process up by throwing a little nitrogen in, like you were talking about, if you can get that carbon to nitrogen ratio somewhere in the 25 to 30 to 1.
Yeah, but we don't know what his pile consists of exactly, so that's where
true.
It's
there
hard.
Could be nitrogen,
right?
In
that's
there.
Why. That's yeah. Why I didn't say absolutely do that, because you might be at the right ratio already.
You could be, but I did notice this, Brian. When Zane started talking, he said, "My sister has sheep, not me." He's taking credit for the manure. Nobody takes credit for the sheep, Zane. I don't know what's going on with that.
I'm a Vietnam, but that's about it. Otherwise, they're paying my butt.
All right. Well, you keep it between the lines there down in Kansas. Get home safe, Zane. Thanks for calling again.
And I got one other question.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
On incorporating insecticide and herbicide, what is ideal depth in heavier soils? I'm looking. I don't know if I want to go ahead and build myself a rig with like a more of a finishing tool. Or would it be all right just if I would a crumbler for incorporating many herbicides I'm looking to incorporate?
Okay, excellent question. You mentioned insecticide too. We don't worry too much about the insecticide part. The only thing would be if it would be one of the more dangerous insecticides, so it would get below ground, so you don't have to worry about animals or anything. But that's usually not the big concern. It's like you said there at the end, herbicide. It depends a little bit on the herbicide you're using. So if it's, let's say, for example, old trifluralin, we still use a bunch of that on our farm. That you can actually get down a little bit deeper. It will become a gas in the soil. It can move its way up. With many of the other products that we're going to talk about, in fact, almost everything else, is what we would call a shoot inhibitor. So like a lot of the group 15s, they're shoot inhibitors. So they have to be kept relatively shallow. We like light incorporation. And the reason why is because you think about with a lot of these weed seeds, they're only going to germinate at a half inch or an inch deep. The shoot is going to be above that point. So ideally, we'd like to keep the herbicide in that top inch of soil if we can. So we don't like going out with, let's say, a disc, for example, and then a little bit gets down too deep. You've kind of buried the herbicide, and that's the fear that a lot of the chemical companies have too, and that's why many of them tell you don't incorporate at all, because they're so scared to death that you're going to get it too deep. We love incorporation because that gets it down in the ground a little bit, meaning it requires less rainfall to get activated, because you don't have to have rain to move it down into the ground then. So we see better performance when it is lightly worked in. I don't care exactly how you do that. There are many tools that can do that, but just try to keep it real shallow. Coming back to trifluralin, not only does that become a gas in the soil and can move up, but it's also a root inhibitor, so it can be deeper. Prowl and Sonalan are the other root inhibitors we commonly talk about. But like I was saying, almost everything else is a shoot inhibitor. You absolutely want to keep it shallow and you'll get the best performance.
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of looking at. So one of the yellows is what I'm kind of looking at.
So with the yellows you can go just a little bit deeper, but almost everything else you want to keep it pretty shallow.
All right, real good. Thank
okay
you.
You bet. Thanks for the call, Zane.
Yep, bye.
Yeah, when we start talking about those yellows, they are getting to be pretty popular again, especially trifluralin, as cheap as it is. Prowl's not that bad either. Prowl is a no-till product. It doesn't require incorporation, yet it is very, very similar to trifluralin. But like I was saying there, we do get some complaints about Prowl from time to time, and it all has to do with rainfall. And it, you know, quite frankly, that's where a lot of people complain about pre-emerge herbicides. If they don't get the rain timely, then they say, oh, it doesn't work like it should. Okay, well, you can solve that problem. If you're in a drier area, just lightly work it in, and then you're going to get it down into that root zone or into that shoot zone, and it just requires less rainfall to activate the product. So, you know, there are just plenty of little tricks out there just like that that you got to be thinking about. And it's just like our discussion from earlier in the show when we were talking about, okay, playing the odds for growing degree units. We're simply playing the odds with herbicides. When are we going to get rainfall and how much rainfall are we going to get? Well, I'm in a drier area of the country, so I know darn well that I have a lot less chance to get the rainfall that I need to get the product working 100%. And I want to get the most effectiveness out of the dollars that I invested. So in order to kind of counteract that, because I have less rainfall, less rainfall chance, we lightly incorporate almost everything we do for herbicide, pre-emerge.
It's Farmer Friday on our show today. We're taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
Maximize your flexibility and control the toughest broadleaf weeds and grasses with Anthem Max herbicide from FMC. With a wide application window in both corn and soybeans, and with an easy-to-tank mix formulation, Anthem Max is ready to go when you are. Visit fmcagus.com or ask your FMC retailer about Anthem Max herbicide. Always read and follow all label directions and precautions for use. FMC and Anthem are trademarks of FMC Corporation or an affiliate.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
As your corn crop grows and the ear begins to form, potassium is at a high demand, almost as high as nitrogen. The same is true for soybeans, with similar high demands of potassium during pod fill. Don't fall behind. Ensure your crop is getting its potassium with Catalyst. Catalyst by Actagro has been shown to be the best at entering the leaf when compared to other leading potassium products. Visit k-supercharged.com for more information.
White mold and sudden death syndrome are two of the most important fungal diseases in soybean production today. But did you know 40 to 50 million acres in the north central region are affected annually? When every season has different disease challenges, the question becomes, how can you ensure the best start for your soybeans no matter what? The answer is Heads Up Seed Treatment. Trusted by growers across the Midwest, Heads Up offers a new mode of action to prime your beans to help fight fungal disease. For more information, visit headsupst.com.
Welcome Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting from the Morton Studio today on Farmer Friday and taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Got Dave on with us right now in Illinois. Dave, thanks for hanging on there.
Not a problem.
Yeah, we get a lot of questions, and you never know where it's going to go. And when you have a year like this year, I bet you had some questions on your farm that came up throughout the year.
Well, this last year, I'll give you a little background. We had early planted corn, which was last part of April, last half of April. That was about half of it. The rest of it was around the 6th of June. So we had two totally separate entities there. Most of the beans went in late. But the worst thing we had was the one farm we had liquid manure put on last fall. The analysis came back and they put on almost 240 pounds of actual. It must have all leached away, because that farm only made 70 bushels of the acre on corn.
Oh my goodness! So. Yeah, that's, you know, we would have probably been in the same boat, Dave. We were trying to get manure out there. We just couldn't get it out in the fall of 18, so we didn't have it. But we probably would have had that same problem.
Yeah, but other than that, everything. I mean, the early corn was going 240, and the late corn was going in that 200 range. So we're not complaining on that. And most of our beans were going in that 60 plus range. So, you know, down here in our area, I'm not complaining a bit this year. We were some of the more fortunate, had very little prevent plant for us. So a lot of guys did a whole lot more. We also sow oats. We were a little bit shy on oats last year. We'll be higher this year. But that's just one of those things. We just take what the good Lord gives us and keep on going. So,
hey, talk to us about that oat crop, because did you have some oats in the ground then in 2019? How did they fare through all that rain?
Actually, not too bad. They were in that around 100 bushel range, which is really average for us to the lower side. This coming year, we're going to be almost four times that, just because we've got one farm that's going to be sowed back to alfalfa. So rather than that, like I said, that was very average. The highest I've ever had on oats is one year I had one field pulled 170, and that's I've never had that before.
Wow.
So I don't look at having that anytime soon either. So
yeah, that's pretty awesome. You know, I was wondering about the disease pressure on the oats, and that's one of the things that guys are talking about this year. A lot of the grass crops had more disease issues just due to how much moisture we had and everything else. Did the timing work out on the oats that you escaped some of that, or did you have to use some fungicide?
We did not have to on our oats for grain. What we put in for cover crop and prevent plant, some of that we bailed off, got hit really hard with rust. But other than that, basically we did pretty good.
All right, you mentioned you were changing up the rotation just a little bit this year. What are you thinking with the reports and everything that's come out? Has that made you think a little heavier on corn or a little heavier on beans, or which direction are you guys heading?
Well, for most all of our corn and bean rotation, we're staying about where we have been. This is just one oddball farm where we're going a lot heavier on oats this year.
Okay.
But other than that, we're staying pretty consistent with our rotations. That we also run some beef cows and some sheep. I know you're giving the sheep guy a hard time.
of course you had to say sheep, Dave. Way to go. Well, it's funny. The reason that I joke about that, because growing up, we had a cow-calf operation, a farrow-to-finish hog operation, and anytime Brian or I would complain about all the work that we had to do, my dad would say, well, hold on. We also had a dairy, we had chickens, and we had sheep that we were constantly fixing fence for when I was growing up. So he said, don't complain or I'll get some sheep.
Yeah. Until about 2 years ago, I had hogs, and that last was walked off the farm about 2 years ago. I loved them, but I just haven't missed them yet. So the sheep are just still part of it. So, but then, yeah, I'm a cow-calf operation too. And so, yeah, it's a fun year. We don't calve until late, so we're doing good on that.
Yes.
We won't start lambing for another 3 weeks yet. So,
Well, thank goodness for that. Yeah, I know the early calving is, boy, it's pretty challenging, especially when we get wet years like this. Well, Dave, hopefully this next year is a little more back to normal for guys in your area. I mean, I'm glad you turned out okay on the deal, but wow, what a challenging year in 2019. Hope you get a better year in 2019.
That's plan A.
You bet. Well, thanks a lot, Dave. Really appreciate having you on.
Have fun, guys.
You too. Let's head down to southeast Nebraska. We got Justin with us right now. Justin, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Good. I know Nebraska had an interesting year, to say the least, too, but it was kind of fun. You know, a lot of guys actually got some things done with, I think we talked to you before about liming and different things. How did you turn out in your area?
Well, this fall actually turned out great. We got a lot of projects done I never thought we'd get done. Just the rain kind of shut off after the first part of October until today, and it feels good to accomplish a lot.
Yeah, yeah, it is nice. I know we didn't have that year in 2018. We had a little better harvest for us in 2019. You know, how are guys doing in your area? I know there's a lot of flooding, certainly, and some really dramatic floods that went through Nebraska over the last year or so. Are things getting back to normal for the most part, or we still got a ways to go?
Well, that along the Missouri River, as high as the water tables and everything's been, if chances are high it's not going to get planted again next year. But even up in the hills, there's a lot of springs that are running and tile lines that haven't shut off. We've been fortunate enough, we put some tile in the ground up until the last week, and going 4 foot down from the bottom of the hill to the top, there's solid moisture the whole way down.
Yeah, my dad always looked at that as such a positive. He's like, well, at least we got a shot in the hills that we could get something. We'll have a little moisture there to get things started. But I think there's a reasonable amount of that, too. Brian was talking about earlier in the show, he's like, man, if we have all that moisture, we don't have any oxygen. And that oxygen in the soil is pretty darn important, too.
Yes, yeah. When the tile pipe wants to start floating out of the bottom of the trench, you know you got plenty of moisture.
That's for sure. You know, one of the things that I was thinking about too for you guys, because we've got some of this in our area where there's been a lot of flooding, is just wondering what we're going to have for weeds. I thought I'd give you a heads up, since South Dakota is north of you. We're sending kochia and pigweed and all those fun things down the river. You guys probably already have a lot of that, though.
Yeah, well, I'd say our biggest problem is mare's tail and water hemp and ragweed. I guess I got one bottom farm. I haven't experienced a flood until this year, and it's going to be interesting to see what comes up next. Well, this spring now.
Are you going soybeans on that ground, or are you going to go corn?
It'll be in soybeans.
Okay, so that brings up a good point. So what are you going to do? Are you using Xtend beans? Are you using Enlist beans? What's your game plan for the trait?
They're going to be Enlist beans, and I'm going to be spraying. My plan is to do the pre-emerge with Trivance and Prowl, and then come back with Liberty.
Okay. Interesting. Trivance and Prowl. Okay. Yeah, the post-emerge, we did a lot of work with the post-emerge sprayings this year on some Enlist beans just to learn more. You're gonna like that. You're going to have some options there with Enlist chemistry in combination with Liberty. We had some really good luck on that, and we've got some tough ground to go to with some pretty heavy weed pressures. So, yeah, you have to keep in touch with us, Justin. Let us know how you turn out on those flooded acres. Hey, thanks for calling in today. We really appreciate talking to you, and best of luck here going into 2020.
Yep, thanks, you too.
All right, Brian, we had a question the other day, and it was from Gary in Texas about Bermuda grass and controlling some of the tough grasses that he had, like broadleaf signal grass, crabgrass, and barnyard grass.
Yeah, and it was right at the end of the show, and we didn't have time to talk about it a little bit more. So the most common grass herbicide in Bermuda grass pastures would be Pastora. Pastora will work pretty well most of the time. There's also Plateau, and both of those are going to be pre-emerge herbicides. Could they be used a little earlier? Yes, they could. They're going to have some residual. And then the other thing, but I would say, like Pastora, the main thing in there is like Old Accent. So you need the the weeds to be up, and it will control barnyard grass, signal grass, crabgrass, as will plateau. The other thing is pre-emerge prowl, but there are many other products. There's everything from pendulum, barricade. I mean, there are a whole bunch of different ones, but prowl is usually the cheapest and it's pretty good.
Thanks for all the calls and all the questions today, and thanks to you for listening today. We really appreciate that. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.